Hello, everyone out there. This is Mike Lindell of MyPillow, and I would love for you all getting involved to support Brandon Stations and his network. If you use the promo code WVW, you can save up to 66% off all my products at MyPillow.com, and half the proceeds are going to go to support his great network. Thank you.
WVW Broadcast Network is pleased to present the Pry Report with Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. Dr. Pry was an intelligence officer with the Central Intelligence Agency and was responsible for analyzing Soviet and Russian nuclear strategy, operational plans, military doctrine, threat perceptions, and developing U.S. paradigms for strategic warning. Dr. Pry is executive director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security, a congressional advisory board dedicated to achieving protection of the United States from electromagnetic pulse, cyber warfare, mass destruction terrorism, and other threats to civilian critical infrastructures. Dr. Pry has also served on the staffs of several congressional commissions. Due to his expertise, he's been a guest on numerous national and international radio and television programs, such as Life, Liberty, and Levin, with host Mark Levin on the Fox News Channel, Lou Dobbs Tonight on Fox Business, and the BBC made his book War Scare into a two-hour TV documentary, and his book Electric Armageddon was the basis for a TV documentary by National Geographic. Dr. Pry has written numerous books on national security that include Blackout Wars, Apocalypse Unknown, Electric Armageddon, and War Scare, Russia and America on the Nuclear Brink. And now, here is your host, Dr. Peter Pry.
Welcome to another edition of the Pry Report. I'm speaking to you on July 19th here in 2021, where our focus here is on national security. And there is so much to cover. Our country is in such peril from so many different directions. I want to start off by talking about the W-88 nuclear warhead. This has been not much in the news in the mainstream papers that people read about, but inside the Beltway, there has been a ballyhoo over the fact that a new nuclear warhead, a modernized nuclear warhead, as they're describing it, called the W-88, is being deployed on our ballistic missile submarines. And so that's supposed to make everybody feel good about our nuclear deterrent, because we have this so-called new modernized nuclear warhead finally going out to the ballistic missile submarine fleet. But it is so misleading, and it's in effect really a lie. It is not a new warhead, and it is not a modernized warhead. It should be called a recycled warhead. They've got to change their names. You know, Russia and China and North Korea are deploying new warheads. They're deploying modern warheads. What a new warhead is a warhead that hasn't existed before and is newly manufactured. That's what a new warhead is. And a modern warhead is a new generation warhead. Warheads of advanced design, you know, the cutting edge technology that nuclear scientists can make today. Things like super EMP warheads, which is what North Korea has, China and Russia have them too, or ultra low yield nuclear weapons, such as Russia has, you know, that make no fallout, or weapons that have adjustable yield and can be used for a variety of purposes. North Korea has got those too, and then so does China. Those are modern warheads. What we've got, the W-88, the warhead that's going out to the ballistic missile submarine fleet, is an old warhead. You know, it was designed way before Ronald Reagan's presidency, and it was built during Ronald Reagan's administration. The W-88 was never intended to last maybe 10 years. That's the normal surface life they have for these nuclear warheads. It was meant to last 10 years. But then Bill Clinton, when Clinton got in office, he was very anti-nuclear. He was surrounded by anti-nuclear people. He wanted to sign the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty so that there would be no more nuclear testing, because the anti-nuclear people in the Clinton administration thought that this would be a clever way of making all nuclear weapons obsolete everywhere if nobody could ever test them. Now, that was a false assumption to begin with, because you can actually have confidence in some nuclear weapon designs. In fact, in probably in all nuclear weapon designs, you can have enough confidence in them being able to work, without testing. The first atomic bomb ever used, the Hiroshima bomb, was never tested. The test that we conducted in World War II was of the Nagasaki bomb, an implosion design, a little more sophisticated design. But Pakistan and India conducted a series of nuclear tests some years ago, but those weapons, weren't built overnight. They obviously had those weapons in their stockpile for many years. And they tested for political reasons, and they tested quite sophisticated weapons, including neutron bombs. Those were their first tests for Pakistan. India had conducted one test many, many years earlier. But for our very sophisticated nuclear weapons, especially when they're old, indeed obsolete, and you've changed a lot of things on them, in order to have confidence that it's going to work, you really need to test it. And the people who originally designed those nuclear warheads, people like Dr. John Foster and Dr. Lowell Wood, have been warning for years, testified to Congress, that these nuclear weapons that we've been patching together and recycled nuclear weapons is what they are, and we've been just patching them up to continue and extend their lives, that we have less and less confidence. The original designers have less and less confidence that these things will actually work. And some of the information that was revealed in the press reports on the W88 is very illuminating, very disturbing. For one thing, there was quite a panic going through the U.S. nuclear weapons community. In the National Nuclear Security Administration, they're the ones that are responsible for maintaining our nuclear weapons, the actual nuclear weapons, the warheads. They thought that the W88 might have finally reached the end of the rope in terms of its service life. They were really concerned that, wow, this thing is so old and there's so much wrong with it that we're not sure we can get it back, we can fix it up. And so there was a concern for about 2 years over that. And a friend of mine, who happened to be the administrator of the National Nuclear Security Administration, and she's a great American hero, her name is Lisa Gordon Haggerty. She's the one that's responsible for kicking butt in NNSA, which had a lot of holdovers from the Obama administration and even from the Clinton years. People who believed in this stockpile stewardship program and a lot of them are anti-nuclear, even though they're working in the nuclear weapons facility. They come from the universities where they've been brainwashed into non-patriotic attitudes. But anyway, Lisa, when she was the administrator, she kicked their cans around and got the W88 recycled to the point, where it could be used again and sent back to the fleet. But one of the and that took a lot. According to the reports, really they had a change, like the fusing mechanisms and the chemical explosive lenses that are used to ignite the bomb. Almost everything except the so-called physics package, the actual plutonium pit that's the trigger, and the tritium core, which is what causes it to be a thermonuclear weapon and gives you the fusion reaction. Because to make a hydrogen bomb, at least the way we do it, you have to set off a small atomic bomb, which is called the trigger, and it's made of plutonium before, in order to raise the temperatures high enough to ignite the tritium to give you that thermonuclear explosion. Those things are the only things that were basically left changed. Everything else, and a nuclear weapon is the most sophisticated technology known to man. Everything else basically had to be changed out. And it took them 2 years to get past this crisis so they could bring the W88 back. We thought we were going to lose it. If we lost it, if the weapon couldn't be recycled, there goes the ballistic missile leg of our nuclear triad. The most survivable leg of the nuclear triad would be gone. It wouldn't have any weapons that it could use. And to give you a sense of the magnitude of the problem, one of the things that was the biggest holdup, was a transistor that goes into this warhead that originally cost $5 was a $5 transistor, but it was a special transistor that was made by a special defense industry, a specialized defense industry for this warhead. And it was a long time ago that it was made, and the industry didn't exist anymore. And the people who originally designed it were retired or dead, and they didn't have any blueprints for the transistor, so they didn't know how to build it. So one of the things that had to be done on Lisa's watch when she was the NNSA administrator was they had to reinvent this transistor and learn all over again, how do we make a transistor for the W88? And now the transistor, it costs $75. It's a $75 part now. And that was the last obstacle, you know, to making the thing work. So it's back to the fleet. But just think about that. I mean, as Obama would like to say, there are these teaching moments. And I'm trying to use the W88 here as a teaching moment about just how complicated and fragile our nuclear deterrent is and how the lack of credibility with it that has been patched up again, you know, that these are not new nuclear weapons. These are not modernized nuclear weapons. These are old-fashioned nuclear weapons that may not even be relevant to the current strategic environment we exist in, because the bad guys have much better weapons that are new generation weapons that can do things way beyond what you can do with the W88. So in addition to being stuck with an old technology, it's also a technology that, how credible is that? Can we have really high confidence that the W88 is actually going to work when you've changed so many parts in it? It hasn't, you know, we're still not testing. You know, we haven't tested in 30 years, even though the Russians and Chinese broke the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty. They've been testing for 30 years. We haven't tested, and we still have no plans to test. So that thing, the W88, the nuclear weapon that's going back to the submarines that we're counting on, hasn't been tested. You know, think about, you know, if you had I've used this analogy before. You know, suppose there was a jet airliner, a 747, and you decided that you weren't going to test it, you weren't going to fly it, you weren't going to turn on the engines for 30 years, and you relied on some kid who's good with computers and computer programs to try to come up with a computer program that would simulate all of the functions that make a 747 fly. And you're relying on that computer program, including close inspection of all the parts on the 747, to say, well, I need to replace this part and I need to replace that part. And my computer program tells me if I do that, the 747 will be safe to fly. After doing that for 30 years, would you go and be a passenger on that 747 and chance that it's not going to crash? Of course you wouldn't. I mean, that's insane, but that's what we're doing with our nuclear deterrent. And we're doing it in the open, in public. The North Koreans and the Chinese and the Russians can read about all this stuff and do read about it. So, you know, the credibility of our nuclear deterrent goes less and less all the time. So Washington is celebrating, oh, we got the W88 back. Well, you know, I'm very increasingly nervous about our reliance on that. And that's one of the areas that I hoped, you know, President Trump would change. You know, that we actually need new nuclear weapons. We need nuclear weapons that are comparable to the kinds of things that the Russians and Chinese and North Koreans are making. Super EMP weapons, for example. You know, we need to have those in our own inventory. All right, so that's story number one. The other big story here that I wanted to talk about, I want to go back. I think I talked about this on the previous show, but it can't be talked about too much. The fact that we've now discovered that China is building 145 new ICBM silos. This was just discovered while China was having its 100th Party Congress, the 100th anniversary of the Chinese Communist Party was being celebrated. And then suddenly, lo and behold, we've discovered that they've got 145 new ICBM silos being built. And this suggests that America, and it's almost certain that those are for the DF-41 ICBM, which carries 10 warheads. So if they're going to deploy, the estimate is now that these silos are going to be ready to be loaded in 2 or 3 years. That's how long it'll take to finish building the silos. So 145 DF-41 ICBMs is 1,450 warheads. So for that one ICBM that China is getting ready to deploy, that's more nuclear warheads than the United States has in its nuclear deterrent, more operational warheads than the United States currently deploys. So China in 2 to 3 years, just with that part, just with those 145 DF-41 ICBMs, will be ahead of the United States in terms of the number of nuclear weapons that they can deploy. And all of those weapons will be brand new, modern nuclear weapons capable of doing things that we can't do on this ICBM. In addition to that, they're deploying new ballistic missile submarines, bombers, and they have intermediate range ballistic missiles, you know, that we don't have, that are both capable of nuclear and conventional attack. Now, this represents possibly one of the biggest intelligence failures in U.S. history, although Washington isn't admitting it yet, because according to the latest assessment on the Chinese nuclear threat that was put out by the Pentagon just a couple of months ago, China is only supposed to have 200 nuclear warheads. But here they are, building enough silos for 1,450 nuclear warheads. Well, what happened to the 200 nuclear warhead estimate? You know, the Pentagon isn't apologizing. They apparently aren't backing off. In fact, they're relying on left-wingers like Jeffrey Lewis. He's an academic pinhead, you know, who's a political scientist. He's not a nuclear weapons expert, even though the press treats him like he's one. He's got big opinions, you know, on everything. And he can always be accounted on to have an opinion about everything, even though he has no expertise in the area. And the press has gotten the habit of going to him because he's the director of nonproliferation studies for the East Asia Institute for Middlebury Institute, which is, I don't know, it's some college associated with Vermont and Monterey, California, but it's not part of the intelligence community. You know, it's a college, it's a university, it's an academic institution that has no ties to our intelligence or defense communities. And in fact, their whole point of having an opinion, you know, they're all a bunch of lefties in this institute. And the idea is that the Pentagon always gets it wrong, and maybe they do get it wrong a lot. But Jeffrey Lewis gets it even more wrong. Anyway, here's Jeffrey Lewis' latest piece of fiction to try to reassure everybody that the China is not that serious a threat, and we shouldn't use these silos as a reason for the United States to really modernize our nuclear deterrent. And Jeffrey Lewis's argument is that, well, maybe they're not going to put, in fact, he asserts that this is a shell game they're playing, and that most of these silos are probably not going to have an ICBM in them. According to Jeffrey Lewis, they might only deploy 12 ICBMs in these 145 silos, and the rest of the silos will be empty in what he calls a shell game, you know, so that we would attack empty silos and waste a lot of our warheads on the empty silos. That is almost certainly not what the Chinese are doing. In fact, they told us through Global Times back in April. Global Times is a newspaper that's used as a mouthpiece for the communist. It's just all the newspapers in China are state-owned, and they are oftentimes used as a mouthpiece to provide plausible deniability, to float a balloon and tell the West what they're planning to do. But there was an editorial in the Global Times back in April that said, you know, we should, because America and China are having strained relations, we need to build up our nuclear deterrent really quickly, and we should deploy 100 or more DF-41 ICBMs. And then suddenly we discover Jeffrey Lewis discovers 145 ICBM satellites building in the desert. Now, I think I commented also about, the implications of the fact that it was Jeffrey Lewis who found these things. You know, he found these things by looking at commercial satellite photography. He hired, in fact, it wasn't him, but he hired somebody. He hired a graduate student to look at the commercial satellite imagery. So how come the CIA and the DIA and the NSA didn't look at that? We've got satellites dedicated to this. And they either didn't find the silos or they didn't tell us about the silos when they could have in their report. Either way, it's really bad news in terms of the trustworthiness of our intelligence community, that they're either so incompetent that they couldn't find those silos, or they're so dishonest that they didn't want to embarrass the Biden administration by revealing the existence of those silos. And I suspect it's strongly the latter. You know, we've got the China Joe problem, this might make it awkward for the Biden administration to change direction on China and move back toward a friendly relationship with China. But the last and maybe most important point I want to make about the threat, is that the nuclear threat from China and the implications of these 145 ICBM silos is most Americans, not just the people, but also our policymakers, and even people who are supposed to, in the Pentagon, who are supposed to think strategically about these things, have been brainwashed by arms control theory into thinking that China and Russia and North Korea shouldn't really be regarded as threats until they can build as many or more nuclear weapons than the United States. Now, Russia is regarded as a nuclear threat, by the Pentagon, because it definitely has more nuclear weapons than the United States. They probably have a lot more nuclear weapons than even the Pentagon is willing to credit them, because so far, there's all kinds of evidence that Russia is cheating on the New START treaty. And they probably have a 2-to-1 advantage in strategic nuclear weapons, in addition to a 10-to-1 advantage in tactical nuclear weapons. And even the Pentagon understands, and even most congressmen and members of the Senate who don't think strategically understand that is not a good thing, when they've got such overwhelming numbers. But the point is, this arms control way of thinking about things, and we call it the nuclear balance, is a misguided way. It's a very simplistic and wrong way of thinking about the nuclear threat. And you can see it happening in spades in regards to these 145 silos that have been discovered, because almost every newspaper report on the topic starts off with or includes somewhere in there, okay, we see the Chinese are building 145 new ICBM silos, and maybe this could give them 1,400, maybe it could give them, the 1,450 warheads in the future. But right now, the Pentagon tells us that we have a big advantage in the nuclear balance, that they have only 200 warheads, some say 350 warheads, but we've got many more warheads. We've got, about 1,300, 1,400 warheads ourselves. So we have many more warheads from China. And so we should still feel safe. We shouldn't get alarmed or upset by this development, because we're way ahead of China in terms of the number of nuclear warheads we have. And this is the idea. It's called bean counting, that the number of nuclear warheads you have determines how safe or unsafe you are, because if you were an arms controller, and almost everybody in the West has been brainwashed to think like an arms controller, then what matters is, is there equality? Equality is always such a big thing in the number of nuclear warheads, that we're still way ahead of them. But that's not how the other side thinks about these matters. They think like nuclear war fighters. China doesn't need to have an equal number of nuclear warheads or to achieve parity with the United States in order to pose a mortal threat to our country. You know, what they need is the ability to perform a first strike against the United States, a disarming first strike. And they don't need to be equal with it. Oh, but even before I get into that, let me make the point that this idea that we even know how many warheads China has or North Korea has or Russia has is a big lie. It's a big lie because arms control theory needs us to know in order to measure the balance, we need to know how many weapons the other side has. And so we pretend, there's plenty of people out there, including our own intelligence community, to pretend to know. And we have these estimates about how many warheads they have. But to use China as an example, we don't really know how many nuclear warheads China has. You know, there are the differences in the estimates are tenfold. The Department of Defense recently said they had 200 weapons. Strange for them to say that, because last year they said they had 350 weapons. So the number of nuclear weapons that China has actually gone down by more than 50%, according to that Defense Department estimate. That's the first estimate under the Biden administration, all right? A Russian general, Viktor Yasin, estimates that China has 1,600 to 1,800 nuclear weapons. And an analyst who used to work for the Department of Defense and is now a professor at the University of Georgetown, Phil Carver is his name, put out an estimate that China, you know, could be hiding 3,000 nuclear weapons, 3,000, you know, which is twice as many as the United States has. So we don't know how many nuclear weapons China has. But they don't need 3,000 nuclear weapons to pose, or 1,500 to pose a mortal threat to the United States. As I was saying, you know, what they need, and the threat should be measured by, what is their capability to do damage to the United States, especially to our nuclear retaliatory capabilities. If they can wipe out all or most of our nuclear retaliatory capabilities, they can win a nuclear war. You know, there are 400 ICBM silos in the United States. There's three bomber bases, and there's two ballistic missile submarine bases. So those are the areas you have to target. You know, it's a little over 400 targets. So really, all you need is 400 highly accurate and reliable weapons to pose a credible first strike against the U.S. nuclear deterrent. And China already has that, or it's very close to having that. That's just 40 DF-41 ICBMs. 40 DF-41 ICBMs. Each of those ICBMs carries 10 warheads. That would be sufficient. That's 400 highly accurate, reliable warheads that could enable them to win a nuclear war against the United States. And each of them are estimated to have very high accuracies. They can strike within 100 meters of target. So with one warhead, you could destroy a hardened missile silo. To use another example of this, about how, you know, the nonsense about the nuclear balance, and what you should be focused on is not the numbers of weapons, but what the adversary can do with those weapons. Take EMP attack, as people who have listened to this show in the past know, North Korea could do an EMP attack with one nuclear weapon against the United States. It's got two satellites passing regularly over that could be armed for a nuclear surprise attack, an EMP surprise attack against the United States. They pass over the United States regularly, several times a day. And the EMP Commission warned that these could be nuclear armed and recommended the president shoot them down. Unfortunately, that recommendation of the EMP Commission hasn't been listened to. They haven't shot those satellites down. They should. Because with that one, if those have super EMP weapons in them, all they have to do is hit us with one warhead. And not only would that take down the electric grid and our life-sustaining critical infrastructures, but the EMP fields from a super EMP warhead are so powerful that they could paralyze our nuclear retaliatory forces and our command and control systems. And we, even the ballistic missile submarines that are at sea, you know, we wouldn't be able to execute them if you can paralyze the command and control systems that are used to talk to those submarines, because those submarines need to get emergency action messages and unblocking codes from Washington in order to execute their forces. Without those codes, the submarines can't be used. So even with one warhead, you could theoretically win a nuclear war if it's a super EMP warhead. And so this idea that we should feel safe and comfortable, you know, that we don't have to worry about a country like North Korea, you know, because, oh, we have many times the number of nuclear weapons they have. That is not the relevant metric. You know, that simplistic bean counting attitude is not the relevant metric in terms of an effective nuclear deterrent. You know, can you defend yourself against a super EMP attack? That's the relevant metric. That's why we need to harden our electric grids and harden our nuclear retaliatory capabilities. At least those need to be hardened so they can survive a super EMP attack. You know, and we need to have contingency plans to deal with a possible first strike from China. Are we looking for that? What are we planning to do if we detect evidence that they may be getting ready to strike us first? You know, this is a much more dangerous world, and this simplistic idea that is highlighted by the discovery of the 145 ICBM silos. I mean, as a classic example, I constantly accuse the United States and the Western democracies of being strategic optimists, dysfunctionally optimistic, the way the Western democracies were before World War II, where we can always come up with some kind of a rationalization as to why we don't have to worry about this threat, don't have to do anything about that threat, that we're not in a crisis yet, so let's put off doing anything until tomorrow. This is how world wars start. This is how you get millions of people killed when you think that way. And these very attitudes are coming out once again in response to the non-response that Washington is having, trying to sweep under the rug and ignore the strategic implications of 145 ICBM silos in China, or ignoring the threat that's been with us now for several years of these North Korean satellites, illegal satellites that are passing over our country all the time that could be armed for super EMP attack. Well, I'm out of time again, but thank you for tuning in and listening. And God bless all of you, and God save the United States of America. Peter Pry signing out for the Pry Report.